This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. I'm Rose Aguilar. Now we are going to discuss Homegrown, a new documentary that follows the lives of three Trump supporters as they prepare for the January 6th insurrection. The film details what shapes their ideology and the lead up to the 2020 election, their involvement in the insurrection, and what happened to them in the aftermath of the violent attack on the Capitol. If you're in the Bay Area, you can see Homegrown at the Mill Valley Film Festival tomorrow at the Lark Theater in Larkspur, and Sunday at the Berkeley Art Museum and Pacific Film Archive. Find more information at KALW.org, click news, and then your call. Michael Primo is director of Homegrown. Michael is a multidisciplinary artist, journalist, and filmmaker. He's co-founder and executive producer of the media production company Storyline. Hi, Michael. Thanks to you and your team for making this documentary, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, it's great to have you. You got incredible close-up footage of these guys in their homes and their private life, and then in the middle of the violence at the Capitol on January 6th, you were right next to them. First off, where did the idea for this documentary come from?
So, I first had this idea probably about 10 years ago, looking at the sort of just explosion of rhetoric that was becoming increasingly explicitly violent. I was really interested in better understanding people who, feel justified in using violence to achieve their political aims. And so in about 2018, we set out to sort of explore the conservative movement.
How did you convince these guys to let you into their lives?
That's a good question. We might have to ask them to really understand that question. But, I think my work has covered social movements for so long that I fundamentally kind of understand the nature, the sort of nebulous nature inherent to social movements. I think I was really curious about their kind of core critique, which is that they are sort of losing faith in a system that they feel like is increasingly rigged for corporations and the wealthy at the expense of working people. Feel an intense amount of sort of shame about the inability to, have what they believe they're entitled to in their day-to-day lives. And I think that sort of like opened up the possibility for conversation. And I, approached them and said, I'm listening and I want to know what motivates you.
Now, you are a Black filmmaker, and in past interviews, you have said that your vision of the MAGA movement was much wider than what you encountered. You actually met several Latino and Black people who are proud MAGA activists.
Yeah, that's right. I think, I think often the media portrays this movement, which is called MAGA. They self-identify as being part of the Patriot movement, which, predates MAGA and it will outlast MAGA. MAGA is just the latest expression. And, what I encountered was an increasing participation in this movement by people of color. And I think, liberal anti-racism is not prepared for a multicultural far right, which is increasingly what is happening.
I think that so many of us are questioning our own assumptions. We all have them, of course. And I mean, I've done that. I thought, wow, that's interesting that there's so many people of color in this movement, or so many young women who are on the front lines of the anti-choice movement. So what was that like for you, before making this film and then being right in the middle of it? I mean, for example, Christopher Quaglin, one of the person that you focus on the most, we see him living his ordinary life at home. We'd never see his wife, but we hear him talking to his wife on the phone. They're about to have a baby. He's getting the baby room ready. But at the same time, he's showing you his man cave full of tactical gear and AK-47s. So you got such close access to these guys. And then you were with another guy who becomes friends with a Black Lives Matter, Thad. He becomes friends with a Black Lives Matter activist. So what was that like for you personally to just witness all of this and to maybe question your own assumptions given the close-up access you got to these guys?
Yeah, I mean, it was deeply moving. I didn't expect to find what I found, which is a sort of dynamic and sophisticated group of people who are from all these different types of backgrounds. But ultimately, I feel like they're looking for purpose and meaning and community and to feel powerful and some joy. Like their movement fundamentally is fun, and it really encourages like this sort of like joyful, jokey party atmosphere, which is sort of hard to wrap your head around, but is really counter to the kind of stereotypes I think that we have often of these, of this particular movement, of this movement in particular. And I get it, stereotypes are necessary to sort of flatten and sort of delegitimize people that you disagree with. But I was, you know, kind of moved and confused, that, but also sort of really deeply intrigued by the different types of people I found, sort of, and the different ideas I found present in the movement.
And as we see in the film, they're also very violent and have fascist tendencies. So Christopher Quaglin, who's from New Jersey, he's a member of the Proud Boys. When he shows you his automatic rifles, he says, "This is badass. Pull the trigger and just let them ride." I mean, these guys are also very violent.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, Chris is a perfect example of the people who sort of valorize violence and sort of commit, you know, are ready to sort of use violence to fight for what they believe in. And that is a sort of stark reality that I think gives us a vision of something that's coming for democracy that we haven't quite fully reconciled with. Because often we think about, you know,
before 2016, Chris says he did not consider himself to be political. He said he's never paid attention to elections. And then he decides to call himself a white chauvinist and is on the front lines of January 6th. I mean, I can't even imagine what it was like for you to be in the middle of that. He's yelling at cops, eventually slams into them, pushes them. What is it about Trump that gets people like Chris so involved and to put so much on the line? Because this guy was eventually sentenced to 12 years in prison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for someone like Chris in particular, Trump was somebody who was able to sort of like speak in very simple and practical terms. They was able to name an enemy. And that sort of like really helped Chris sort of organize his thoughts around his own personal sort of frustration and discontent. And it's really, really troubling, and particularly in Chris's case, because he said that he was fighting for his child, that he was doing this all for his newborn baby, but he won't be able to see his baby now for 12 years as a result of his federal conviction.
Really, like,
it's
sad.
It's tragic.
It's tragic. You feel for the baby and his wife and even him. I mean, really. Let's play a clip from the documentary Homegrown. This is Christopher Quaglin in his hotel room on January 5th, the day before the insurrection in D.C.
Dude, I got so many filters. This is what all this was. I literally have two pair of pants, three shirts, and gas masks, and body armor. And I had eight bags.
And I this gas mask, if necessary. Holy
and a taser. I think it might be legal. It's floatable. All this is my survival. This is all medical. Trauma, bullet wounds, tampons, because they're great for knife wounds. People are like, oh, we're going to have a civil war. And I'm like, oh, I've been planning for this for 10 years. Are you kidding me? These things are bad. Dude, and you're not breaking through them. I don't care if they're from China or not. My wife's from China. She's the best lady I ever met. So I don't care if they're from China or not. You're not breaking through those. And if I would love to see some Antifa, like, just hogtied.
That is a clip from the new documentary Homegrown. That is Chris, a New Jersey man whose wife at the time was 8.5 months pregnant. We see him leading an ordinary life, decorating his baby's room. He's a member of the Proud Boys, and he's got a man cave full of tactical gear and AK-47s. He brought a lot of that gear with him to DC. And I wonder, Michael, spending time with Chris, we see him on the front lines of January 6th. He's so angry, hitting cops, pushing cops. He gets tear gassed twice, but wants to go back to the front line. And then we heard that clip. What explains that level of anger?
Yeah, for Chris and for a lot of these people, I think we, you know, we want to prescribe sort of some sort of ideological or deeply political source of the rage. But for people like Chris and other people I met, it was about belonging. It was about feeling just the shame of not being able to achieve the things in their own personal life that they perhaps believed that they were entitled to, and feeling sort of like forgotten and marginalized, which I think speaks to this larger crisis of masculinity that we are sort of experiencing in this moment, where many men don't understand what it means to be a man in this contemporary world and are lashing out in the most violent of ways.
Chris and others call themselves white chauvinists. What does that mean to these guys?
So, you know, the word sort of white or Western chauvinist is a turn of phrase invented by Gavin McInnes, the founder of Vice Media. And chauvinist is a word that means sort of ultra or militant patriotism or nationalism around an idea. And for them, it means to be, it's an expression of this new, what I call this transnational nationalism, where it's this ultra militant nationalism for the United States, but also for sort of European and quote unquote Western values and this idea of sort of neoliberal capitalism, which they are fighting so fervently for in some way. And also, you know, the expression of sort of racism runs the gamut. Chris is someone who doesn't necessarily say that he says I am not racist, but certainly expresses this racial animus that is wrapped up in his own sense of frustration around his place in life.
The other thing, and I want to be respectful in asking this question, but you hear a lot of these guys saying we'll never be a communist nation. I mean, you hear Trump now calling Kamala Harris a communist, a fascist, and a Marxist. It's just such idiotic comments. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, you hear some of these conversations and you just wonder, where is this coming from? Where do they get their information from? Because a lot of it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I mean, if you look to the sort of founding of the conservative movement as a self-identified social movement by William F. Buckley some 70, 80 years ago, one of the tenets that he wrote in the National Review and his sort of manifesto of what it means to be conservative was identifying that the fundamental enemy of his ideas was Fabianism, which was a sort of democratic socialism out of the United Kingdom at that point. And this communism, this idea of the antithesis of capitalism, is the boogeyman. It's the sort of greatest expression of the enemy of their ideas. And this sort of, you know, rise in authoritarianism needs an enemy. It needs to have a clearly defined other in which to define itself against. And that includes, you know, people streaming to this country from other places, as well as this sort of economic idea. And that sort of is why they have this sort of such fascination with this idea of communism. It's fascinating. Mm.
Michael Primo is director of the new documentary Homegrown, which follows the lives of three Trump supporters as they prepare for the January 6th insurrection. Michael embedded himself with these guys in their homes, and then as they prepare to go to D.C., he was right there on the front lines with them, Chris especially, as he slammed into cops and pushed cops. Chris eventually was sentenced to 12 years in prison. He was found guilty on 14 charges, including felony counts of assaulting police and obstruction of Congress. This is one of the longest sentences stemming from the January 6th attacks. Have you been in touch with Chris since he was sent to jail or to prison?
I had been talking to Chris over the several years while he was in jail awaiting trial. I have not talked to him since he was sentenced and transferred to a federal facility.
You know, the other thing is, I was just thinking about the New York Times piece about Donald Trump speaking at a fourth grade level, the lowest of the last 15 presidents, according to a new analysis. He has really capitalized on all of this, speaking directly to these guys, and they follow him at his word. It was interesting to watch after the election was certified, and Trump said, you know, we love you, go home. They became really angry at him.
Yeah, they felt, you know, there was a lot of feelings of initially of betrayal. You know, Trump was very clear in calling people, rallying people to sort of take a last stand in Washington, D.C. on January 6th. And he was going to walk down to the Capitol after his speech. And he did not. He was prevented from doing so by the Secret Service. And as a result, you know, a lot of people initially, you know, for a brief, very brief window, maybe 24 hours, felt that that was a betrayal of what he told them he was going to do.
What about the violent aspect of all of this? There's very disturbing footage in the film of street fights or the Proud Boys fighting each other with their fists. And then there's also footage of these Proud Boys and other violent Trump supporters getting together for rallies or gatherings on the street. And then when cars go by, they break car windows. I mean, they're wearing tactical gear. They've got pepper spray with them. What are your thoughts about the violent elements of this?
Yeah, it's troubling. I mean, Reuters has done some research that, you know, suggests that we are experiencing the largest uptick and explosion of political violence since at least the 1970s. And the difference between what's happening now versus then is that was often there was like property crimes directed at armored trucks and property. And now what we are experiencing is violence against individuals. We have what you mentioned that's in the film, and there are increasing cases of a neighbor shooting a neighbor over a flag or some sort of offhand comment. I think it's terrifying because these people, many of them don't feel like they have recourse through the political system to fight against a system that they believe is rigged and not working in their interest and their favor anymore, and are at their wit's end and are frustrated and very well armed. You know, I think if this was a foreign country, the State Department would issue travel advisories for the United States.
Wow. That was the other question I wanted to ask you. We saw Christopher Quaglin's guns. Are most of these guys heavily armed with weapons like AK-47s?
Many of them are. Many of them are. Not all of them, for sure, but many of them are. You know, we live in a country with a lot of guns. Mm.
What do you think will happen after this election? We were just talking with journalist David Daley about the possibility of the Supreme Court deciding the election if it's close. What are you hearing from these guys?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we know that Trump will not concede the election regardless of what happens. And he, as long as he is alive, he will be fighting for what he believes is a stolen series of elections, even though he knows that the first election was not, in fact, stolen. But that big lie is a great motivator. And we will see an increase in, you know, what you could characterized as sectarian violence. I think what will be different this time versus what we saw last go around is perhaps more violence that might seem random, but is in fact sort of like organized and sort of part of this broader movement. And it has the potential to be far deadlier than what we experienced last time.
Are you still in touch with a lot of these men? And they're mostly men.
Yeah, many of them. Yeah.
And again, can you give us any insights? Because it's easy for us to, again, come to have assumptions about these men. But as a Black filmmaker, what else really struck you about the level of racism that you did or did not experience?
Yeah, I think what I was actually surprised to see is certainly the level of racism that does motivate some people. But I met people in this movement who are legitimately not racist, who are arguing and in deep conflict and conversation and debate with other members of the movement. That's what I did not expect to encounter. So, for example, there's a person in our film, Randy, I saw Randy sort of wrapped in fierce debate with other members of the broader Patriot movement, Proud Boys, but also other sort of MAGA, what you might characterize as MAGA supporters. And he was actively fighting about who America is for. Is America for a certain type of person, or is America for an idea? And for Randy and some other conservatives, America is for an idea that should include all people. But there are other members of the movement that say that America should only be for white people. And increasingly, the latter argument around who America should be for is winning the argument within their movement. But I think it's significantly important to point out that there is a debate within the conservative movement. It's not a closed or finished issue for many of them. And that was startling to me.
We don't have time to talk about Thad, but I hope people can see the film, because we also meet Thad, a 42-year-old Latino Navy veteran who was ultimately disavowed by the Proud Boys for disagreements and for working with one of the leaders of Black Lives Matter. So that was a very interesting part of your film. What do you think is in store for this movement that has been emboldened by Trump and the Republican Party?
Yeah, I think what you're going to see is, it's really kind of hard to imagine, but with our sort of partisan divide that's happening now, but you're going to see increasingly retrenched partisan positions where people are just increasingly absolutely incapable and unable to work with people who they disagree with on issues of politics or so-called values. I think a really scary turning point in democratic societies is when political parties no longer see their political opposites or opposing people of opposing ideas as legitimate governing parties. And what you're experiencing in the Republican Party and increasingly in the Democratic Party is that the other side is illegitimate. And that is a subtle but really important turning point that has fractured many democracies in the last century. And what we're going to see, I think, is an increasingly people losing faith in democracy as a fundamental idea and being increasingly attracted to people who are presenting authoritarian alternatives to democracy. And that is scary.
Just quickly, where do these guys get their news?
You know, they have a healthy diet of sites like the Gateway Pundit and sort of arch conservative news outlets. And there is a lot of shared ideas on social media through sites like Telegram that allow for large broadcast channels, quote unquote, kind of like a mimicking Twitter or Facebook, where, you know, a small group of people or individuals can broadcast to thousands of followers. And that, you know, has this sort of like really robust and really dynamic network of shared information in this sort of echo chamber that is supporting and echoing and reifying itself.
We have about a minute left. In an interview you did with the Washington Post, you talked about Project 2025, and you said that you recorded plenty of discussions within the movement about how to take better advantage of their power next time, which is the theme of Project 2025. We've been doing so many shows about that. So what did you learn?
So I think what I learned is that it was a movement effort. I think very often the far right or the conservative movement is characterized as a top-down sort of grasstops-led effort. You know, the Heritage Foundation often gets the credit for that. But what I experienced was that this was a sort of real grassroots movement among the sort of the intellectual and ideological and activist spectrum of the conservative movement, which has found a sort of broader alignment across all these different ideas that play within the conservative movement. And because they are sort of unified by a shared national project of obtaining, maintaining, and maintaining power, that they are able to sort of sometimes put together some of their petty differences between different factions of their movement in the service of power. And that, I think, was one of the things that really sort of opened my eyes around what became the 2025 initiative.
Michael Primo is director of Homegrown, a new documentary that follows the lives of three Trump supporters as they prepare for the January 6th insurrection. Michael embedded himself with these guys. You see them at their home in the case of Chris, who's getting ready to welcome a new baby. He's decorating the baby's room, and then he's showing Chris his man cave full of tactical gear and AK-47s. Michael, thanks to you and your team for making this important documentary. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here and be in conversation with you and, you know, think about what the future of our democracy is.
Yes, and we'd love to have you back to continue that discussion. If you are in the Bay Area, you can see Homegrown at the Mill Valley Film Festival tomorrow in Larkspur and Sunday in Berkeley. Go to KALW.org, click news, and your call. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.